God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Okay, tonight our 40-minute guest speaker is Cindy from Laguna Niguel. Welcome.
Looking for a clock. Hi, my name's Cindy Cicchini, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cindy.
And thank you for inviting me to your meeting tonight. It's always a privilege to be invited to Alcoholics Anonymous to share. And, you know, when I was new, I never thought this was going to be me. But my sobriety date is November 2nd, 1986. My home group is the South Coast Speakers Meeting on Wednesday night in Laguna Beach. And I have a sponsor who's been my sponsor since I've been 6 months sober. And, you know, I'm a gal. If you don't like people to cry, you're not going to like me because I cry. Alcoholics Anonymous takes my breath away. It takes my breath away that you could take someone like me and turn it in. Me into someone like me. It's just amazing, you know. And I'm so glad to be here tonight for my friends' birthdays, and this is a good meeting. And I actually started my day in San Clemente on the floor over here at Bikram Yoga at 6 a.m. And I like that yoga. Too bad I have to work usually. But so my job tonight is to tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And that's what I'll do. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I have a mom and a dad, and I have a brother that's 6 years older than me, and we are the family that really looks really good, you know. Our house looked really good. We had that red brick house, and we had a white picket fence, and we had my last name was Dobies, and my dad, like, it's all about Vic Dobies. Like, if everything he owned could say Vic on it, it would. And but our house had a big white D on it, you know, in script, and it was painted white, no chips, no chips around my white windows or anything at my house. And I tell this story about our fence because it tells you how my dad was, like, so meticulous, how it had to look so good. So we had this white picket fence, and this is like, I grew up in the 50s, you know, and this is like the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, so no weed whackers, right? So he had this fence, and he had these poles pounded into the ground, you know, pound the poles in, and then he had rings on the picket fence. So he would, when it was Saturday and he'd cut the grass, he'd pick the fence up off the rings, right, cut the grass under the fence, and then put the fence back down on those poles, on those rings, and then it was like perfect. There wasn't a blade of grass sticking up around that fence. And then he'd wash those cars, and Saturday my mom, who's like that, like Betty housewife who makes a meatloaf and the vegetable and a carb and probably a little dessert, and my dad would get cleaned up and go out with another woman, you know, and it caused a little tension in the house. And this is those days where we had one phone on the kitchen wall, and if my dad didn't answer the phone, there might be a hang up, and my mom might say something. She might not. She's really nice, like so nice. And my dad might like knock that phone off the wall or leave and slam the door, and it would come off the hinges. But later on, he'd come back and fix all that, and then Sunday morning would roll around, and we'd all get in that car and go to church like nothing happened. You know, we'd sit in the same pew. We sat in every week with my grandpap and my uncle and aunt behind us, and the same people in church, sing those hymns, go home, have a roast for lunch, right, and then go on about our day. And that's how it was, and I'm not alcoholic because of that, but was a little interesting, you know, and that was to go on my dad's, he was like a runaround, you know, it's just kind of the guy he was, and he went to work every day. My dad went to work every single day, and my mom is a good mom, like I said. And another thing about growing up is kind of interesting, is I was born without my left hand, and I know it doesn't look like it. It shouldn't for 20,000, you know, but a lot of times you're going to see me and I'm going to have one hand. Most of the time when you see me just hanging around, I'll have one hand. And A lot of times I have two hands. Like if I'm wearing long sleeves, I have two hands. I wear my hand to work usually because I'll wear a jacket. It's a lot to think about, really. It is. If I'm going to the gym in the morning, I got to pack my gym bag. It's like shoes, jewelry, underwear, hand, you know. It's a lot. And I want to tell you my story. It's not that I took a drink and felt like I had two hands. That wasn't my story. My story has been that I've taken a drink and lost my hand and woke up the next day and thought, where is that hand? And so, I don't know. But, oh, geez. And, you know, I wasn't, we never had like that discussion at my house where my parents sat me down and said, you know, you were born without one hand or blah, blah, blah. It just wasn't like that. It was more like my dad, he's one of those guys that whatever you could do, he's going to do better, and I'm his kid. So that means that I know how to do backflips off of high dives and water ski because I was going to do whatever other kids did. And but, like, I wanted to be a brownie like all the kids, right? So I remember my parents coming into the living room when I was sitting there and say to me, like, you can't be a brownie. The brownie's called, is what they said. The brownie's called, and you can't be a brownie because you have one hand. And I was like, but see, I don't cry, and I don't say, I wish I had two hands. What I do is I just get that like a little soldier, and I probably started right then with, screw them, who needs them anyways? You know, that's kind of, I guess, I don't know. And I said to my dad, I don't know, a couple years ago, I said, Dad, so what did your mom say to me? And my dad said, he said to me, oh, just forget about them. Well, how the hell do you forget, sorry, but how do you forget about the brownies when all your little friends are dressed up on Tuesdays in brownie outfits, you know? And I was telling my girlfriend that, and she said, I should buy a brownie outfit and wear it around the house on Tuesdays. And, you know, you get no sympathy around here, but like I said, I never cried, and I don't remember saying, like, I wish I had two hands. I didn't. That's just not who I am. And I was that kid in school that if you were doing cartwheels, I had to do one-handed cartwheels, and I had to do whatever you did just to feel as good as you. And, you know, I want to say, too, that people say very strange things to you when you have one hand. I was getting my nails done a while ago, and, I'll start off with just the day. It was the same day, and it was probably 5 years ago now, but I was in this farmer's market down here, and I just came out of, like, an aerobic class. And I remember this little outfit I had on was pink. It was weird, but anyways, this guy comes up behind me, and I'm putting my produce in the little bag, and this guy comes up behind me. I don't even see him, and he goes, were you in the service? And I go, and I say to myself, he's talking to you, Cindy. So I turn around, and I go, no, I wasn't. This is what he said. A lot of people walking around like you today. It's like, what does that mean? I don't know, you know, and I go, I just kind of go to my line and check out. Same day, I swear. I go home, shower. I go to get my nails done. The lady goes, so what happened to your hand? You know, they always, it always starts like this. Can I ask you a personal question? Can I ask you a personal question? Okay. What happened to your hand? I was born without my left hand. She said, has it been a long time? Well, this goes on and on. I could write a book, but what I know is, before I came to AA, and people would ask me, they always ask, I had to make it so you were right with me. I had to tell you that it's okay, and I don't have any pain, and yada, 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 because I had to make you feel like I'm okay. But I came here, and I learned to love you with all your stuff. And somehow I don't need to do that anymore because I know God loves me and I know God loves you and he wants us to have a good life. And so sometimes now I could just simply say, you know what, I don't like to talk about it with complete strangers. I can't say anything mean or then I'll feel bad. But, you know, anyway, I don't think that's why I'm alcoholic. I'm alcoholic because I'm a gal that takes a drink and I want another one. I love that effect that's caused by alcohol. I love that. That's what I love. That's the feeling I love. And can I tell you that I get that so many times when I'm sitting in a meeting and I'm hearing the message from this podium. I got it tonight. I get it Wednesday night at my meeting every week. It's either a birthday person or all the birthday people or the speaker. I get that. Sometimes just when someone's reading the chapter 5 or the 12 traditions, I get that feeling. And then I know I'm okay and I'm in the right place. And I know I could go out there and be with all of them. So anyways, that's me. I grew up in this house. I'm like in high school in the 70s, and the time of peace, love, and rock and roll, you know, and my parents were kind of strict, and I'm in one of those families that you just go to college. It's just, there's just no question where you're going to go. The only question is which one can you get into, and I wasn't too smart, but and I, you know, in high school I'm drinking that Boone's Farm on Friday night and that Strawberry Hill and Ripple. I was telling someone, I was walking my dog with this girl the other day. She did not know what Ripple was. Like, and smoking weed and just all that stuff that I do, you know. And I didn't do it a lot because my parents were strict, but I did it when I could. And I went away to a state university and I drank every chance I could get. I'm just, as soon as I went there, the party was on. And I love mescaline. I don't know if they have that anymore, but I used to take that and just lay in the grass and look at the trees and, you know, all that stuff and smoke that weed and just, and, you know, my dad paid for that school and he worked hard. He worked really hard and he bought me clothes and books and I had a little car there and I'm not a daughter that is grateful. I would come home on weekends with dirty clothes, and my mom would wash those clothes, and I'd get home on Friday night, and I'd go out with my friends probably till 3-4 o'clock in the morning, come home, wake up late on Saturday. My mom would probably take me shopping for clothes, do all my laundry. I'd go out again Saturday night, come home late. Sunday, my mom would pack up clean clothes and food, and I'd go back to school and to party more. And I never sat with my parents and asked them how they were. How's that job, Dad? Or, you know, how's this? I didn't care. I never even thought about it. I don't know how that is, but that's who I am. And I got out of that college, and I have a degree in psychology, and I remember very little. All I know is people that live in closed spaces have a lot of arguments because they don't have their personal space. That's it. That's all I remember. That's the only thing I remember, and I don't know why I remember that. So I got out of that school, and I live in Pittsburgh. So in Pittsburgh, in 76, it was like steel booming. You know, a lot of steel works going on. My father was a manager down there. My uncles, I got a job in the steel mill, and I'm working in the office. And seriously, there must be like 22,000 men in the steel mill, and like 50 women. And I'm 22 years old, and it was awesome. I'm serious. I worked in this office. I worked shifts, which means I worked like seven, daylight, 3 to 11, 11 to 7. And in front of this office I worked in, there were like all these trucks would pull in and say, hey, do you want to ride down to the lunch truck? I don't know. It was my boss like said, Cindy, you can't be driving around in the steel mill trucks. It's just, it was just, I was having too much fun. And I had no goals. And I was making good money there. And I could have really made a career there. But I had no goals, designed for living, career path, wanted to get married and have children, join the country club, whatever. I don't know if I didn't think I could deserve that or have it or... I was just a party girl. I just wanted to party, go to the gym, go to work, sleep, and go to the mall. That was basically, that was my design for living. And in 1980, I worked there a couple years. In 1980, the Steelers were coming to the Super Bowl here in Pasadena. I'd been here that November to visit a friend of mine, and I loved California. If you've been to Pennsylvania in November, it's very gray, There's not a leaf to be seen, no flowers anywhere. And I came here and it's pretty, and you could go into a gas station and buy alcohol. And in Pennsylvania, there's like these state-controlled liquor stores and bars that aren't even open on holidays, if you could believe it. And or election day, so I don't know. But I came here then, and I thought, I love it here. So the Steelers were coming. I talked these two girls at a bar into driving out here with me. And these girls reported to my father. And I told them we would be back in like 2 weeks or a week or something like that. And I told my parents the same thing. But I knew I was staying. I had everything that was important to me, like my favorite clothes. I remember I had... back then, I don't even know if they have them now, but when you buy a car, they used to have these, it was like a checkbook, and you pulled out this slip, and you sent the slip in. So I remember I had that in my checkbook. That was like all that mattered to me. I had a new car, and that little check thing in my checkbook, and I came out here, and we went to the Super Bowl, and it was crazy that night. And then after the game, we went to Marina Del Rey. I remember we went to this club and like the Steelers were there and all these other people from Pittsburgh were partying, and these people say, we're going to this other club. So I say to these two girls that are with me, hey, we're going to this other club, and this is the kind of friend I am. If you're not like right on my tail, I'm leaving you because I got to go. And I remember pulling away from that club, following other friends, and these gals out in front like, and me just looking in the mirror thinking, good, they were just slowing me down. And these girls reported to my dad. I didn't think, oh gosh, you know, I better go back there. That looks bad. I just thought, screw them. You know, I'm out of here. And I left them. And the next day they came to my girlfriend's where I was staying in Garden Grove to get their luggage out of the trunk of my car. And they gave me that look. And I just thought, why don't they just get out of here? And again, I never thought, you know, how is this going to affect my dad? And what are my parents thinking? And I stayed here, and I come from a family that's it's a close family. We're the kind of family that if somebody's sick, everybody knows, and with cousins and things like that. It's a really close family. And I left them at 25, gone. I just left and came out here. And it wasn't like my family traveled to California all the time or... You know, California was kind of like Gidget or drag racing at Pomona. We just watched it on TV. It really wasn't like, you really didn't go to California. And so I came, and I stayed. My parents came out here. All I wanted to do was like roller skate on that strand in Redondo Beach and have fun. And they come out here, they said, like, what do you think you're going to do, roller skate through life? And I got a job, and you know, it was a good job, and I had a boyfriend at this job, and he liked me, and I liked him, and I was young, and but I'm an alcoholic, you know. Now I'm young, but I'm the girl that wakes up in the morning with vomit all over her, and I'm by myself, and I'm thinking, who did this? And it was me, and like I never heard of. How do you vomit at night? But I didn't think it through. It was just weird, like, yeah. And and I just like drinking all the time. I'm a drunk. And see, I had this boyfriend, and we did things that people do when you're dating: movies, dinner, you know, skiing, whatever. But I'm alcoholic, and there's not enough for me. There's just not enough. And I like to say this because I just thought of it, actually. But, you know, I know a lot of you know Cliff R. from Oceanside. I love him. And he used to say a long time ago that you could line up all the people in China, and they could all say, like, I love you, Cliff. I love you, Cliff. I love you, Cliff. And the last one could say, I love you, Cliff. And he would go, is that all? And that's me, see? And this guy, so, we, you know, I'll tell you an instance of what happened, the way I behave, because there's not enough. So we're at a wedding, and I'm dressed nice, and naturally, you know, it's all about how I look, and shallow. But anyways, we're at a wedding, and I'm like, we're standing here, and we're talking, I say, I'm going to go use the restroom, right? And he says, I'll wait here. Okay, I come out of the restroom, and he's like standing over there, and he's talking to a gal. He's at the bar, and I walk up because I'm like pretending like I'm cool, right? And he goes, here's a drink. You know, hey, here's Debbie. You know, Debbie and Adam are getting married next week. They're going to go to Cabo. She was telling me about their honeymoon. That sounds like a really nice place, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. That's nice. Well, Debbie walks away. I'm like, what's up with that? Like, you said you were going to wait over there. And he said, well, I just came over here to get us drinks. Here you go. Well, and why were you talking to her? And why weren't you saying, you said you were going to wait over there. Well, Cindy, it's okay. Don't worry about it. See, you don't get it. And then he says something like, forget about it. I can't forget about it. Why weren't you standing over there? Like, I can't go past that. And he's like a normal guy, but he's like, forget about it. Don't worry about it. No. And then I do it. See? And if I got my car, I do my thing. Screw you. Who needs you anyways? And I'm gone. And I'm gone and I leave you. And I go home, and this has happened to me many times. I go home and I'm loaded and I pass out and I come to and I do the, you know that? Did it happen or didn't it happen? And then I get that terrible feeling it happened. Oh, and you call them back. And this is before, like, know who's calling and method, you know, all that stuff. And at first they answer. The first couple times you could say, the bird died, I drank too much. You know, I didn't eat, I was drinking wine, whatever. But then after a while, that's it. They're done. They can't handle it anymore. So what I do, I take a drink. I take a drink to solve my problems. And that's my MO. That's my life. And then it's screw them. Who needs them anyways? Once I have some alcohol in me, I'm done. I don't need you. And that's my life. That's my story. This is really cool. A little water holder right here. More people should do this. So anyways, you know, I'm out of that relationship. And then I'm driving around one night. And I'm driving through a place called Belmont Shores, and I go into this bar called Legends, and I thought, I love this bar, I'm moving here. And I moved to Long Beach. I moved to Belmont Heights, 10th and Loma. And I'm living there, and I got a job at Douglas Aircraft. I meet a new guy, you know, I'm meeting this new guy, and I start drinking this 151 rum. I love 151 rum. If you're not done, have some 151. That will get you here. That stuff will, it'll get you here. And I'm a car wrecker. I was always wrecking cars, but I was wrecking them so fast they couldn't even fix the car fast enough. I had, some of you will remember, I had a brand new RX-7. It was such a pretty car. It was, when they first came out, they had these hidden headlights. And one of my headlights was like, it couldn't get it together. And I just kept taking it back. I'm like, can't you fix this thing? It's, you know. And he said, Cindy, this thing's been on a frame shaker 2 times. And that's not good. And on a frame shaker. Anyway, so, you know, I got that going on. I'm drinking this 151. And I'm working at Douglas. And I had a good job at Douglas. I don't know what I did there, but it was a really good job. And one day I went into that job, and I'm the kind of girl, see, that I drink before work. You know, if I don't have anything left from the night before, I go to the market at the corner of Anaheim and Redondo to the boys' market, and I go in, and nobody taught me that you could buy booze at 6 a.m. That's like an alcoholic thing you learn. If you know that, not good. But I would go in there, and I could put a raincoat over PJs and drive up in a brand new car and go in and buy a bottle of vodka. And I got to tell the clerk it's someone's birthday at work. And I go home and I mix up a couple of drinks, and I drink before work. At lunchtime, I'm a half pint girl. 5 gulps of vodka, gulp, 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 out the car window. And I get that nice, warm feeling, and I could live in this world. And One day I went into work and the boss said, we want to take you to the infirmary. We think you've been drinking. And I walked out and quit. I left my badge. It was a Friday in August. And I'll never forget that day. And it was 26 years ago, or more than that now, 27 years ago, because it was a year before I got sober. And I went home. I got a drink, right? It's morning. It's like 9 in the morning. I like drinking in the morning. I drink, and then I have to go back to work to get my final check because I don't have any money saved, and I can't say, like, mail it. I have to go get it, and I'm leaving there, and I smash my car into the side of the tunnel underneath the runway at the Long Beach Airport, and the police come, and I go to jail. And I tried jumping out of the police car. I was just so felt like I was in such a jam. And I don't know about alcoholism. And the police got me. And so they handcuffed me to my belt. It's embarrassing. And it was a tie belt. I mean, it wasn't even like, it was like a tie leather belt where I couldn't get out. And they took me to jail. And my alcohol content was 0.32, and that's not the highest I've heard here, but it's good for morning. So, right? So I go to jail, and I get out in the afternoon. This is 1985, a lot different than it is today. And I go home, and my boyfriend's playing softball in Seal Beach. I got to get to the game because I got to get out there among them, right? Same clothes, and I'm at the game, and I'm a girl that always kind of knew when she was going down. Like, I'm a drink till you go down. So anyway, I knew I was going to pass out. So I, oh, brother, don't tell anybody. So I find your car out in the parking lot. I found this car, and if the doors aren't open, I just lay on the hood. Because you can't leave me if I'm laying on the hood. I lay on the hood, and I used it. I can't believe that was me. But it was. And I lay on the hood, and I passed out, and he came out, and he's like, that's it. We're done. I'm taking you home. And he drops me off. Next day, same thing. Didn't happen. Well, that was a bad day because I wrecked my car, lost my job, boyfriend's like, no money. It was just really horrible. So I call my father in Pittsburgh, and I say, Dad, I want to tell you, my dad had given me some guns to protect myself. And I call my dad in Pittsburgh. I say, Dad, I'm going to kill myself. And I think I have a problem with alcohol. I need help. My dad is he is like a guy that could solve problems. He's this big guy. He has this Nick Nolte voice. But I brought him down to his knees that day because he didn't know what to do. Next thing I know, the Long Beach police are walking through my apartment door. I'm like, what are you doing here? And they said, your father called us. And they called my brother, and I got this awesome brother. My brother he had moved out here. He's one of those guys that was transferred as this big job, you know, transferred from a company in Pittsburgh, probably because his sister was here, and he wanted to be out here, and he was living in San Fernando Valley, and he had all the crap to retile his bathroom that Saturday, and the Long Beach police call him and say, we're with your sister, she has a gun. My brother drops everything to drive to Long Beach, and he walked in there that day, and he looked at me, and he, with that look, and he said, go put some clothes on. And it was a horrible Saturday, and I was mad at everybody. Like, why are they doing this to me? You know that? And then my new sister-in-law came down after he cleaned that up, and my dad was there the next day on a Sunday. And it was horrible. It was horrible because I needed to drink. But they don't know about alcoholism. They don't know if they give me money to go to the grocery store, I'm going to go to that boys' market and buy a bottle of vodka and drink it on the way home. They don't know. They don't get it, but that's what I do. Well, my dad had talked to some friends of our family in Pittsburgh and got in touch with a heart surgeon there that was an alcoholic that knew Clancy. And my dad took me to the Wednesday night meeting on Wednesday, and Clancy sat me. We met Clancy outside, and my dad's going to Clancy, well, could we get her job back? And you guys know Clancy's like, I don't know. And my dad goes, well, what can I do? And Clancy looks at my dad and he goes, There's not a goddamn thing you could do. She's got to do it. And I thought, that's rude. Right? I'm thinking, this guy, you know, here's my dad. He's asking for help, and that's all this guy could say. And so my dad stayed with me in Long Beach and walked me through that court stuff for 3 weeks or so. And I went to that Pacific group every Wednesday night like it was going to save me, and drinking. Clancy sat me next to this gal that was from Lakewood. She was really pretty and blonde, and she raised my hand when they asked for people their first 7 days. And then my dad took me back to Pennsylvania, and my parents, who were divorced but still friendly and good with each other, they put me in a 28-day treatment program. And I got out of there after 28 days, and I thought I had it. But I learned in there about drinking NyQuil and Listerine, and I got out, you guys, and I started drinking NyQuil. Because it's like you're full yourself drinking, but you get loaded on NyQuil. And I was drinking Listerine, my mother's Listerine. And then I would be going to bars or buying those bottles of vodka from those liquor stores, and I was a mess. And I did that for 14 months. This retired couple picked me up every night from my mom's house, the house I grew up in, that red brick house. I was like 32, 31 years old, and they took me to a meeting. And I'd sit in the meeting, and I'd think, I want to be sober. But the next day I would say, I'm going to drink this, but I won't drink tomorrow. And I did it for 14 months. And one night I went home from a meeting. It was a Saturday night. I don't know if I heard something in that meeting. I can't even tell you. But I went home, and I went to my bedroom, and my mother is a clean woman. My mother washes bananas. Her house is clean. And she says monkeys climbed on them. So I went up to my room, and I had that moment of grace where I smelled my room and myself, and I smelled like this funky Listerine, like not fresh breath Listerine, like funkiness. And I thought, had that moment where I thought, I don't want to die, and I don't want to live like this. And I knew that Alcoholics Anonymous was keeping people sober, and I must have asked for help. I don't remember, but the next day was a Sunday. I woke up and I went to 3 meetings that day, and I've been sober since that day. And I didn't have like the lights went on, or I don't know. AA was my higher power. I was coming to meetings. I didn't tell anybody that I wasn't drinking for a while because I was afraid I couldn't do it. And after about 7 days, now that couple knew I was drinking. I smelled like alcohol every day. They never said a word. You guys never said a word. You told me to shut up. If I was in the meeting talking, you told me to shut up, but you never told me to get out because I smelled like booze. And after about 7 days, I said to that guy, hey, Chip, I'm sober a week. And he said, that's really good, Cindy. AAs are kind. We don't judge. We don't judge. And so I came back to California. That boyfriend got in touch with me. And after 6 months, I came back to California. I had a job. I sprayed cologne in the mall. It was Christmas time. I had this full-on reindeer outfit on. And if you bought Polo cologne, you got to take your picture with me. And I want to tell you, 6 months sober, I'm the girl that leaves her mother on Mother's Day. So it doesn't happen overnight. This thing takes a while. You know, I probably went to church with my mom and left. I couldn't even wait till Monday. And I came here on a Sunday, Mother's Day, and on Monday night, I was living in Hawaiian Gardens, and on Monday night, I went to the Seal Beach Monday night speakers meeting. And they asked for people from out of town. I raised my hand. I said, my name's Cindy. I just moved here from Pennsylvania. And at break, this gal turned around and she said, welcome to our meeting. And I asked her where she went to meetings, and she said she went to the Pacific group. And I said, you're the gal that Clancy sat me next to at my first meeting. And she was sober 12 years, and she looked really pretty, and she seemed very nice. And I asked her to be my sponsor. She was not nice. And you know, I'd been going to that Pacific group, but I didn't really know what was going on there. If I had known, I would have never asked someone from there. but I would ask someone that was cool, you know, someone that was like out there when the 12 traditions were being read, or came in maybe and during the speaker and left. Or, but I got her, and Cheryl taught me, or has taught me, to be a good example, the program that saved my life. And she taught me that, you know, our common welfare should come first, and that this isn't about me, this is about Alcoholics Anonymous. And she taught me simple things like, when I'm at the grocery store, return my cart where it says, return carts here. And I asked her, like, what does that have to do with being sober? And she said that we're people that don't follow the rules, Cindy, and if you start following the rules, your life will get better. And I found that to be true. If I don't park where it says, don't park here, I don't get a ticket. Or if I pay my taxes, I'm okay. And if I get to work on time, I don't have to make excuses. And just those simple things. And, you know, I got sober, and I got married to that guy, and we had a good wedding in Pittsburgh in the church I grew up in. And what ended up happening, we were married 14 years, and he ended up alcoholic. And, you know, during that time, I went to work every day. I went back to school. I got a master's degree. And I'm not smart, but you had one, so I needed one. And I graduated, and we had a party. My father had moved to Phoenix, and my mom was in Pittsburgh, and they were here for my graduation. My brother, my sister-in-law, my niece and nephew had never seen their aunt take a drink. We all went to Pepperdine that day. We rented a limo, and we all went there, and I walked. My parents could not have been more proud, and you did that for them. And that's the stuff that just makes me so happy about us, that that's what we do for other people. My dad was so proud. And you know, we got divorced, and what ended up happening is I fell in love with someone from my home group, and it was my buddy, and sometimes I would think, he's weird, you know? And he was secretary of our meeting, and like, he'd have those announcements, he'd roll them up, and he'd be up here like, I think, what's the matter with him? He never smiled. I put smiley faces all over the announcement. We were friends, and then I just fell in love with him, and I told him, and he said, I like you too. And we started dating, and we got married, and we live in Laguna Niguel. We have a good life, and our life is a lot about AA. And we both know that this needs to be important to us. And I want to tell you a little bit about my family. I don't have much time, but, you know, 6 years ago, my mom was living in Pittsburgh, and she had to have heart surgery, and I was there with my brother, and my sponsor taught me that that's about my mother, not about my mother, and to go there and act not all emotional, but, you know, just be there for my mom, and I was able to do that. And then we last year we decided we should bring my mom here to California to be in assisted living. My brother lives in Rancho Bernardo in San Diego. We brought her out here. She's in Escondido. And, you know, I see my mother every Saturday. I talked to her on the way down here tonight. And she said, give a good talk, Cindy. And, you know, I'm so grateful that my mom's here. And I get to be, I mean, I drove around one day for an hour for one of the ladies that was in that assisted living for my mom to get this pink frost-covered girl lipstick. I mean, that's the kind of girl I am today. My mom's like, Sally wants this pink frost lipstick. Oh, really? But my mom would have done it for me, you know. I go down there, we go down there, we have an old English sheepdog, we take her, we go sit with my mom. It's so fun. She's so nice to us and so happy. And then a year ago, my dad was living in Phoenix, and I got a call from him, and he said he was short of breath. And what ended up happening that week is my dad had to have a quadruple bypass, and he had that surgery. It went well, and then his heart wasn't pumping well enough, and his kidneys kidneys and failed, and they had to put that. Well, it was just a mess for 5 weeks, and my dad is not the kind of, it was the week that I was going to be 25 years sober, and we were going to have a party that Saturday, and that Thursday my dad was to fly to my house, and you know, I want to tell you, he was flying to my house, but I paid for that ticket, not because he couldn't, but because you taught me that if I was inviting my dad to my house, that I should have that ticket, and I'm so grateful that was my dad. And I'm so grateful you taught me those things. And I had 5 weeks with my dad. I would work all week, and on Friday I'd be on a plane to Phoenix. And I'd sit with him with a washcloth and wipe his face off and put Vaseline on his lips and just tell him how grateful I was that he was my dad and thank him for all that stuff and thank him for taking me to that meeting that night. And it's not that I hadn't said any of those things before, but I was able to say them again. And my dad passed away, and I want to tell you this too, because, you know, my brother called me after that. We were together. My brother did it, and I did it together. And he called me, and he asked me how I was doing. I was waiting for the plane in Phoenix, and my brother had just left Phoenix. And I told him I was doing okay, and he said, "I want you to know, Cindy, you were so good with our father. And I love you very much, and I'm so grateful that you're my sister." How do you get from there to here? You taught me to do these things, and I'm so grateful for that. And Alcoholics Anonymous is the best thing that ever happened to me. And if it means coming to San Clemente on a Friday night when I don't want to and all that and that, or taking that cake on Sunday night to my Legacies meeting, or showing up on Wednesday night with cookies or whatever I do, you know, I've been way overpaid here. And I'm grateful for being here tonight, and thank you for listening.